Ontario's Institute for Clinical Evaluative Sciences reported recently that fewer Canadian children are getting the immunizations they need, putting themselves and others at much greater risk of contracting and spreading vaccine-preventable diseases. Interestingly, though, immigrant children's vaccination rates are better. The study, Immunization Coverage Among Young Children of Urban Immigrant Mothers, Findings from a Universal Healthcare System, is in the May issue of Ambulatory Pediatrics. And joining us to discuss this study today, I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Astrid Gutman, scientist at the Institute for Clinical Evaluative Sciences, staff physician at the Hospital for Sick Children, and assistant professor of pediatrics and health policy, management, and evaluation at the University of Toronto. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin.
Can you explain what would constitute a successful vaccination program with respect to access to vaccines and the proportion of the population that would be needed to be vaccinated to offer global protection?
Well, that's a complicated question.
Mm-hmm.
So, a successful vaccine program would be one in which all of the recommended vaccines are fully covered so that there was no cost to patients and actually physicians. So that's not something we know about in in Canada, but certainly in other countries, specifically in the U.S., some vaccinations are actually cost physicians more money to purchase than they get back in remuneration.
Right.
So certainly that would be one important aspect of a vaccine delivery system. The coverage, the kind of coverage that you need to ensure what we call herd immunity, so that means the protection. So herd immunity essentially means that we are protected from diseases because a majority of people are themselves immunized.
Mm-hmm.
It varies a little bit by vaccine type. But we certainly nationally would like to aim for coverage for each of the different vaccines that we give, in and around the 90 percentage.
Okay.
A range.
Now, what was the impetus for your study?
So our study was, we looked at immunizations because we think these are good markers of quality of primary care. And we had published an earlier study which had looked at some of the health system issues that might be associated with better quality of care. And in that study, we found that physicians that see a lot of children in their practice tend to have practices that are more up-to-date in immunizations. And then we became interested. We had seen a small gradient by family income. So lower-income children seem to be less up-to-date in their coverage
mm-hmm.
than higher-income children. And we started to wonder about whether there were other populations that were at higher risk of being under immunized. And at the same time, we had colleagues who were looking at, were studying populations of new immigrants in terms of access to other services such as mammograms and pap smears in the women. And we thought, and they were showing that new immigrants to Canada were less likely to access these important preventative services. And we thought it would be important to then look to see whether or not these women were also not accessing immunizations for their children. And so that was the impetus to then
mm-hmm.
look at this group of children who were born to new immigrant mothers.
What was the data source?
So we had a number of different data sources, which are all health administrative data. And by that, I mean these are data that are routinely collected either by hospitals or by the Ministry of Health for purposes other than research. So we started with a data set, which are just the hospitalization data.
Mm-hmm.
So in Canada, every hospital has to collect data on every patient that's hospitalized, and they code why, how long the patient was in and what the major diagnoses were and the procedures and all of that. And that then gets assembled and sent to the Canadian Institute for Health Information, and every province is then, every Ministry of Health is able to access their own data for all of their hospitals. And again, this is just routinely collected data. So we started with that data source to look at all babies that were born in between 1997 and 1998 in Ontario to start a birth, what we would call a birth cohort, so just a group of babies born.
Right.
And then we linked those records to, we just had to do a little record linkage within that data set to the mothers who had delivered. And then we were able to, by a health card number, then link to something called the Landed Immigrant Data Set. And that's a data set that is, again, an administrative data set that's collected by the Canadian Immigration on all landed immigrants to Canada. And from that data set, we were able to ascertain which of the babies were born to women who had emigrated in the last 10 years to Canada. And we were able to glean very quite nice detail about the country of origin, about what kind of an immigrant were they. So where, did they come in in the family group? Did they come in as a refugee? Did they come in under the business group? A little bit around their education when they arrived. So quite a bit of information about those mothers.
What were the results? What were your findings in this group?
So then our findings, so then what we did was we looked at all of the primary care services that the children had received. And again, this is actually from the billing data that is collected by, or that is submitted by physicians to the Ontario Ministry of Health. And we found that at the end of, at age two, when we counted up the number of immunizations that children had had, we found that overall only 66% of all of the almost 100,000 children in Ontario were completely up to date on their immunizations. So now many of them were only missing one immunization. So at age two in the era that we looked at, most children should have had five different immunizations. So we found that only two-thirds of them were completely up-to-date in their immunizations. But we did find that amongst children of new immigrants to Canada that they were more up-to-date. So they were 69% of them versus 65% were completely up-to-date.
Now, you were quoted as saying that this is a good news, bad news story. In what way?
So I think the good news story is that, in a population of new immigrants, it's heartening to know that they are accessing appropriate and preventative services, you know, at least as well as children born to non-immigrants. So I think, you know, that speaks to the fact that in our universal healthcare system, you know, there, we don't seem to have significant invisible barriers to care. And I think that is quite important. And it's important in the context of this other small amount of research that has been done that suggests that immigrant women may not be accessing enough care, even in a universal healthcare system for themselves, you know, for pap smears and mammograms. The bad news story is, and again, we have written about this before, but, you know, a 66% up-to-date immunization coverage rate is low. It's much lower than our targets, and although you know we couldn't tell which immunizations these children were missing, and that has somewhat important implications because to be missing a fourth booster shot of something that you've had at 2, 4, and 6 months has very different implications than missing your measles, mumps, rubella shot, which you give right after the first year birthday. It has very different implications for how well protected children will be from disease. But on the other hand, you know, immunizations are, you know, the most cost-effective intervention we do, certainly for children and probably in medicine at all. And I think we shouldn't. I think we shouldn't be complacent to think that two-thirds coverage when we should be aiming for 90% is good enough.
Well, we see outbreaks, you know, in the United States or even, I believe it was Eastern Canada, the Maritime Provinces, where they had an outbreak of, this is older individuals, I think it was people in their 20s that were contracting measles.
And we just actually last week there was a case of measles in an elementary school in Toronto, right? So, I mean, even just last week and in this age group. No, absolutely.
So I guess the question I have then is then why are Canadian children not being vaccinated at rates that would better contribute to herd immunity? And secondly, and again, taking into account, you know, as you rightly mentioned, that it may be, it's a lot different to miss your initial measles shot as opposed to your fourth Pentacell vaccine. But why are we seeing this lack of, is it lack of follow-up? Is it we're not reminding parents that they're just busy and they sort of, there's so many vaccines to give in a particular schedule that they just sort of lose track? Are there specific reasons why? And also, why are we seeing the immigrant children having a slightly better vaccine rate?
Well, I think the, so to start with the last question, I think, and again, we couldn't explore this in our research because we didn't interview people and we didn't, you know, ask for the reasons, but I think it's possible that, you know, that people who come from countries where some of these diseases that we prevent with vaccines are still common, I think they may be of a mindset around the importance of vaccinations, which, you know, we hear, I mean, I think most people, certainly most people who have young children now are of a generation where they have never seen polio, maybe not have seen measles either. And so I think, immigrant mothers may be a little bit more attuned to the importance of immunizations from that context. But I think it's an important question to explore. But I think that your first question is really important. And again, we didn't look at this, but we've done other work around this, and it's very clear that to maintain high immunization coverage rates, you need information technology systems at the level the vaccines are delivered, which in Ontario for the vaccines that we looked at are within the primary care system, so in family doctor and pediatrician's offices, that you need systems that can both remind parents but also providers that their children need vaccines. So in the group that we looked at, these children by age two have had an average of 19 primary care visits in the first 2 years of life. Mm-hmm. So we don't think that the problem is that the children are not going to the doctor, but the children may not be going for immunization visits. And if they're going for other visits, it may just be that the chart is never pulled and that immunizations aren't part of what gets discussed. So, and again, in the U.S., they've done lots and lots of really well-designed clinical trials looking at information technology that so that when the child registers for even for a sick visit, that there's a little pop-up screen that says, you know, this child is behind on their immunization.
Right.
Just in this, and it's a very similar technology to for other patients. So, if a woman comes in and hasn't had a mammogram in 5 years and she's of that age group where it's recommended every 2 years that, again, a reminder would come up, or for the patient with diabetes who hasn't seen their eye doctor for 2 years, that these are just reminders of what needs to be done for certain patient groups, and it's quite automated. The other technology that's important are ones where, you know, I think in this group, they're clearly in the doctor's office a lot, but for, you know, older children, so technologies that are able to then contact parents to remind them that their children are not up to date. And so I think that kind of technology within primary care practices will be quite important. And again, as a family doctor will know, you know, in Ontario, there is some movement to start adopting these information technologies within primary health care. So some of the policies around family doctors forming groups and teams, part of those policies include some support for this kind of information technology.
Now, I guess the other final question I had was, again, along the lines of following up and ensuring that children are vaccinated. The time frame for this particular study began 1997, 1988, and children were followed for... Was it 10 years? Or
no,
so?
It was only 2 years,
okay.
Actually.
Now, given that at that time we didn't have Prevnar, Rotatec, Varivax, Hepatitis B, Menjugate, these are now added into our schedule.
Yep.
So my question is, are we potentially, if we're now carry the study through farther, potentially going to see even less of a percentage vaccinated because of the total number of additional vaccines now incorporated into the schedule?
Right, and that's great. It's a great question. And again, there have been some U.S. studies to suggest that the more vaccines that are on the schedule, the more vaccine fatigue there is, for sure. And, you know, that parents, you know, see their children becoming pincushions, essentially, and that there is some drop-off in coverage rates. We haven't done that here. One of the reasons we actually looked at some of that older data is, and this just has to do with our the availability of our data, is that we weren't able to distinguish between vaccine types with the data that we had, and so we wanted to study that period prior to these new of the three new vaccines before they were both licensed and then funded. That's a very important question. But there is some, and again, we only looked at Ontario.
Right.
Public Health Agency of Canada does every 2 years does a phone survey of Canadian parents. And the most recent data that they have for vaccine coverage was from 2004, the most recent that they've published. And they suggest, so that is starting to get into that era of the newer vaccines. And their numbers are fairly similar to ours. So they showed, if you look at two-year-olds and look at them getting all of the vaccines that they are to get, that the coverage rate's about 61% nationally. And again, just with ours, we report about 66%, but we actually took out children who had zero immunizations, and that was 5% of our cohort. And we took those children out because, again, we were much more interested in the health system factors, and we felt that those children with zero was more related to parental belief rather than anything about the health system. So our numbers, you know, are pretty much bang on with the ones from the Public Health Agency, which is about 61% total coverage. And again, when the Public Health Agency looks at, you know, how many children have had at least one measles shot and at least one diphtheria, polio, tetanus, pertussis shot, you know, for each individual vaccine, the rates are much higher, as you would expect. But, you know, overall coverage is still an important thing to be measuring.
Well, Dr. Guttman, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to discuss the study and providing an insight into the importance of herd immunity and also some of the reasons potentially behind why Canadian children are not being vaccinated, completely following the complete schedule. And hopefully our listeners will take this to heart and take a look at their children's vaccine records and ensure that they are up to date.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dworkin.
Dr. Astrid Guttman is scientist at the Institute for Clinical and Evaluative Sciences, staff physician, hospital for sick children, and assistant professor of pediatrics and health policy, management and evaluation at the University of Toronto. And coming up, headline reads, antacids could lead to broken bones, study suggests. We'll get into what that actually means, what the actual risk is, and again, getting behind the headline and explaining things a bit more concisely. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.